The Choose Love movement offers no-cost solutions that keep our kids safe, providing them with the skills and tools they need to flourish. Join us in our mission to create the world we want to live in, one that's connected and compassionate. Check us out at ChooseLoveMovement.org. Together, we can choose love.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Choose Love podcast. Today I have a very special guest. Nadine Miles is a physician assistant, a certified functional medicine practitioner, and the owner of Soul Minded Integrative Health, a health consulting company embedded in the systems-based approach utilized through functional medicine. And we're going to talk a lot about functional medicine today. She is passionate about helping others learn how to live consciously by making more informed choices about how to live in a more health-focused way. Together, clients work to improve their self-care, food behaviors, emotional landscape, and nutritional profiles, leading to more confident, energetic, and positive-minded living. She lectures widely to professional organizations, leadership teams, and athletes on topics of wellness, stress management, and mindfulness. The personal mastery nurtured through soul-minded living fosters professional development and team cohesion, helping to improve personal and team outcomes. Nadine,
join
the movement. She's part of our family because she believes that teaching communities how to live right and make healthier choices can lead to a future where being more loving towards oneself and towards others is simply a natural phenomenon. When we choose to love, because it is a choice, the entire earth and all who inhabit it will flourish. That was actually written by Nadine, and that is so beautiful.
It's true.
It is true. And my favorite part is that we were introduced by one of my favorite Choose Love superintendents, and that is Bob Fisicaro from New Jersey.
It's so good to see you, Scarlett. You're always a shiny spot.
Ah, so good to see you too. And I am so excited to talk to you today. You know, I pick such fascinating and interesting people all of this information, and you know, it's also for myself. It's for Choose Love, it's for the kids, but I also have an eye for myself, and when things Absolutely. Work, I want to share them.
Well, we're all on a journey, right? So everything that we learn, we can apply to others, but also to ourselves as well, right?
Exactly.
So makes sense.
So let's talk about functional medicine. What the heck is that?
Yeah. So everybody asks me that. Functional medicine is, in my opinion, the most comprehensive way toward health. And what it is basically a systems-based approach rather than just this linear approach where you have this symptom and we're going to treat it. It evaluates the entire person and utilizes all of the symptoms, all of the body systems in order to help identify the root cause of whatever the symptom or illness or disease may be. So a symptom
sounds a lot like my approach.
Yes, exactly.
To kids' safety, health, and well-being, addressing the root cause. Wow. And it's so true. Like, we go into the doctor's office when we have a symptom.
Yes.
Usually. And so there's already the problem. So functional is kind of the whole timeline.
It's the whole timeline. And it's also this understanding that there may be many causes to the symptom that you're having, or many causes that could be exacerbating the symptom as well. So like, for an example, if you want an example, we can say, let's say someone says, hey, can you help me with my eczema? Eczema is like an itchy, scratchy rash on your skin. Well, when we look at someone with eczema, we think to ourselves, all right, this could be the result of some type of environmental exposure. Like maybe this person has some type of seasonal allergies that was made worse by, let's say, for an example, a mold exposure. Let's say they got a job somewhere and the building had mold in it. That mold exposure, it's a toxicity on the body. It can exacerbate a leaky gut, right? So if your gut no longer maintains its integrity, that's going to allow more antigens to come into the system. And that could promote symptoms like food sensitivities. It can promote worsening environmental allergies. It can promote like a foggy thinking or difficulty concentrating and contribute to that rash. So instead of just saying, hey, you have eczema, let's put a little cream on that rash, we'll do that. We'll apply something to soothe the symptom, but then we'll go out of our way to, you know, utilize diet and clean up the gut and make sure that we reinstate the gut integrity, that barrier, so that there's we're not just kind of healing the eczematous rash, but we're also making sure that it's we're going to have fewer and further between exacerbations of that rash and maybe even improvement of your allergy symptoms. So it's taking something, right, and then trying to elevate the overall health.
And I think about, I just went to the doctor for, a rash on my face, ironically.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because she first put me on viral medication.
Oh, geez.
And then she put me on an antibacterial. Yeah. So, but there was no, it was like, oh, okay, the rash. Let's see. I don't know what it is. It's so funny. Every time I go into the doctor's office, seriously, like I have to say, they've never seen what I have. They have no idea. It is just a guess. It could be a tick bite. You know, I'm sure that's just me. I'm just kidding. Anyway, but no talk about the environment, if I'm in stress, what's going on in my life, why this happened. There's no why. It's just the treatment of symptoms. And I've heard from friends who are doctors that practices are being bought up by insurance companies and they are literally restricted so much in their time that they can spend with each patient. When you have 10 minutes with a patient, it's like there's
difficult.
Only so much you can do.
Yeah, it is true. And they say that the average insurance reimbursed visit is approximately 7 minutes long. And so it's tough to thoughtfully listen to your patient in 7 minutes when what's going on in a physician's mind is I need to type out what this person is saying. So I need to document what they're saying. And then I need to process what they're saying and figure out what it is that I can offer them. And then I need to print out their discharge papers, write their prescription, you know, order their MRI. Like there's a lot going on in the doctor's mind that's really preventing them from having presence with the patient. And of course that makes multiple people come to me and say, you're the only one I've ever felt listened to, you know, because I give them the time that they need. And the truth is, when you're with a healthcare professional and you're being listened to, that actually promotes your own insight to come in, right? Because you're reflecting some concepts off of someone who may have, you know, be able to point you in one direction of thinking versus another. So the functional medicine approach, I believe of course I'm hopeful for it, but I do feel that it's going to become more prevalent as we kind of move forward in healthcare, just because in addition to the fact that our culture is getting more and more sick and more manifestations of disease, there's also more and more research that supports a systems-based approach. There's definitely a time and place for a linear thought process, and we need science for that. But sometimes you just need to look back and say, whoa, how did this person's experience of their living develop into this type of dysfunctional thought, this type of sleep pattern, this lack of movement, this inability to choose nutritious items and things like that, this burden of stress, and how is this conglomeration of, you know, symptoms or this whole entire person, how did we land here?
So I'm taking notes because that just started a whole line of thought in my head. But isn't there research that shows that when you believe that someone cares, that you get better quicker?
I'm not actually familiar with any research. Like I can't say yes, that's
well, I know that there is. Yeah. I just can't cite it.
It makes sense. Yeah, it certainly makes sense. I was just giving a talk to some middle schoolers about stress resilience. They had a wellness day at our local school. And so I was, you know, preparing for it, and I came across a study that showed that if you believe that stress helps you, then when you encounter stress, it actually does. So they did like this study that showed that they did a questionnaire. Do you feel that stress helps you or hurts you? And the people that said it helps you, everybody was given a test. And the people that said stress will help me, gives me energy, gets me amped up, they actually performed better on the test than the folks that said, no, stress is bad, it's, you know, it's whatever. They actually performed worse on the test. So definitely your mindset plays a huge role in the way that you, you know, interact with others. So definitely.
Oh, yeah. I call it the choose love mindset.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny, there's more research on stress, and it's, I think it was like tens of thousands of people, and it's been replicated. They asked them if they thought that stress was bad for them and potentially fatal. Oh, and wow. So out of the group that said yes, of course, there was a group that said, no, we don't believe that stress is bad for us and potentially can lead to death. Out of the group that said, yes, they thought that they believed that stress was bad for them, they had a 30%+ higher mortality rate.
Interesting.
Within like the next decade. It wow. was, it was outstanding. And I know I share that with some of the people that I speak with. I mean, it's like, our mindset is so important. And I love that functional medicine also, you know, includes that. And then I don't know if you study the work of Dr. Bruce Lipton.
Oh, yeah.
Who is one of the founders of the epigenetics field. But he says that over, so 1% of our disease mm-hmm. is caused by genetics. And he says the rest is caused by toxic thoughts,
toxic environment,
you know, and those thoughts are, of course, how we view our environment. And that makes, whether they're toxic or not to us, the result, so important. And then the other thing that I heard was that over 90% of doctor's visits are due to stress.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That is incredible, but it makes sense because you just said that our dis-ease, our level of illness is increasing despite all of the advances that we've made in medicine and technology. It just seems like, it seems like an oxymoron, doesn't it?
It's interesting because we really leaned into genetics, right? Once we kind of decoded the DNA molecule and kind of realized that genetics are a thing, I think as a culture, we want to lean into the concept of genetics because it's easier, right? It's easy to say like, well, that's just my genetic. That again, of something external to me, is something outside of me that I have no control over. Whereas recognizing that epigenetics is much, much, much more of a factor than the actual genetic on switch, off switch, right? And that's been researched like over and over and over again. But the fact that, you know, people will still say, well, my cancer is genetic. Well, my whatever is genetic. Well, this is genetic. It's just easier than saying, no, it's the outcome of the entire human experience that I've had, the coping mechanisms that I've developed, the dysfunctional thinking that I maintain. And then the entire culture that we live in is, you know, it's quite manipulative, very conscious of our pleasure centers, of our, our ability to even have I'm afraid to say this, but our ability to even have some level of free will, because our pleasure centers are hijacked by consumer marketing ploys from when we're little. You know, we feed our children sugar like almost as soon as we can. And that really turns on and activates our dopamine centers immediately. And we don't really stand a chance. It's kind of like the frog. You know how they say the frog that's boiling very slowly in water doesn't really notice what's happening. I mean, we're all part of this consumer capitalist kind of society. And as a result of that, you know, we're in it, you know? So I kind of forget where my train of thought was going.
Well, you know what? That's so fascinating. I just want to back up to epigenetics.
Yeah.
And say that the DNA does have an on and off switch. And so there are diseases that run down
in the family, for
example. In the family, yeah. Through generations. But epigenetics is the study that and that proves that actually, even though we have those propensities, and by the way, it's not just physical disease, it's also mental disease as well, and emotional. And even though we have a propensity based on, as you said, our environment, we don't have to have those switches turned on.
Exactly. And
even when they're turned on, we can also make changes in our lives to turn them off. And exactly. that is so fascinating. And one of the things that I knew about before I started the Choose Love movement, which is why I started the prenatal program.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it is. I didn't realize that.
I know.
Our response to our environment is negatively. Yeah, it negatively impacts the baby's forming brain, and it's giving them signals. Hey, you don't have to come out and read. You've got to come out and run. So your prefrontal cortex can be smaller. Your limbic system can be larger. So, I mean, it starts so early, and it's so important to be just aware. Like I just say, these awarenesses are shock and awe moments for me. It's where I stop and they change my life instantly. Wow. And you never forget because they're so important. And
I just wanted to piggyback on what you were saying quickly. I'm sorry. I don't mean to belabor the point, but you know, it's been about 50 to 70 years where we've seen this very sharp increase in obesity rates, diabetes rates, cancer rates, autoimmune issues. And just from a scientific perspective, right, your genetic code does not change that quickly. You know, genetics are something that, you know, are the result of an evolutionary and adaptive process over the course of hundreds of thousands of years. So that is kind of like a tick against the genetic theory, that in these past 70 years, what is the thing that's really changed dramatically? It's not our genetics. It's our, you know, level of processed food consumption. It's our level of two income families. It's our level of single family homes. It's our level of relocating for the purpose of better jobs and disjointing and disconnecting larger familial connections. It's the loss of the family, you know, the local, you know, like, and the local, I don't know, the milkman and things like that in exchange for large
sense of community.
Yeah, yeah, community. Exactly. You know, back, you know, 20, 30, 50 years ago, you used to be able to send your child to the market to pick up whatever it is that you needed. And, you know, aside from the fact that you felt comfortable letting your kid walk away from the home and go elsewhere without a cell phone, without a GPS tracker on them, that child was interacting with another adult. They were putting money down on the counter and exchanging change and doing math in their head and interacting with an adult who knew them and looked out for them. And those social connections help with stress resilience. And nowadays we have our Walmarts and our Costcos and these humongous stores where you don't even need to interact with another human. You can just order it online and have it delivered to you. So even though things are becoming more accessible, we're losing our socialization, and people are reporting more and more and more levels of isolation, levels of depression, levels of feeling disconnected. So that is impacting our health. And, you know, we have to evaluate that with honesty. We can't just say, no, that's genetic. No, it's not. You have to look at the whole picture, you know.
That is fascinating. And that leads me right into my next question, which is, how can functional medicine help our communities to truly love?
That's a great question. And the answer is, it has a lot to do with a certain level of self-worth. You know, I have the tendency to equate self-love with self-worth. It takes courage to make the decision to apply some love inward. And it's courage that I see often people, they avoid this. And some of that is the messaging that we receive, right? From, again, our capitalist culture relays this messaging to us that from a very young age, that you don't need to look inside for the answer. You need this drink, or you need this toy, or you need this car, or you need this thing for value, for status, for some level of self-worth. And so, there's that. And then there's the way that we're raised, right? To look outside of ourselves for our level of self-worth. And so when you make the decision to go after your health concerns in through the functional medicine approach, what you're doing is these techniques are basically the embodiment of choosing love, right? What are you doing when you choose the functional medicine route? You're making the decision to protect your sleep. You're making the decision to go out of your way to create relaxing environments so that your nervous system can feel safe, so that you can grow, right? We know that our nervous system has to be feeling safe in order to grow. You're making the decision to exercise. You're making the decision to stretch. You're making the decision to potentially live minimally, to avoid, you know, these commercials and these foods. And you're making the decision to look away from that and look inward.
And you know what that is? That's taking personal responsibility,
For
where you are and where you're going.
It is takes courage.
It does. It takes a lot of courage. And I see people that are coming from a fearful place.
Yeah.
And it's literally like putting blinders on our eyes. We really have to take a more holistic view about our life. And again, take responsibility for where we are, not blame, finger point, fault, find someone right. else, including our genetics.
Exactly. I was just going to say that, looking outside.
Right. But, you know, Americans have a tremendous problem with their self-esteem. And it's because of everything that you said. Yeah. There's a study that says over 85% of us lack self-worth, self-esteem, self-love. And here's the problem with that. Yeah. When you have a difficulty come along in your life, a challenge, you do not feel worthy. You don't feel like you can face it. You don't That's feel right. like you have the courage to face it. And so you become victimized. And when you're victimized, you are helpless, you're hopeless, and you can be dangerous. And so what choose love and that formula, having courage, it actually moves that locus of control back inside of us, where we have the power to do what we need to do. And that includes take responsibility for our whole health. That's and right. here's the other thing. Like, it's not easy. It's simple, but it's not easy.
Not easy.
It takes effort, yeah. But all the good things in life take effort. Yeah. Just in this new time.
And it's not easy because then you're kind of like on your own little life raft. The people who love you the most will not support you in this endeavor, right? So,
interesting. Why do you say that?
Well, because for an example, I'll just use the easiest example I can. An Italian, young Italian female client who it turns out has a gluten sensitivity, contributing to a whole host of health problems, you know? And so she goes home. She's relatively young, early 20s. So still like kind of reliant on, still more enmeshed in like the nuclear family. Mom just doesn't think that's a real thing. Doesn't respect that this is contributing to her daughter's ailments and will not, allow for any other type of eating at the dinner table. I mean, that's very difficult to deal with, right? It's like Terry Walls, who's a wonderful physician who has lots of dietary nutritional information concerning multiple sclerosis and did a wonderful job at, practically reversing her multiple sclerosis or at least stopping its progression. Incredible. Or slowing it. She, as part of her protocol, she will get the whole family to come in and say, look, these dietary changes need to be implemented and respected by the entire family. And she'll actually counsel the whole family because it's almost like if you have to give up a certain food that's prevalent in society, it's almost like trying to stop using drugs. You need support. You can't, it's hard to do it on your own completely. So like, that's a lot of it, like from the food perspective, from just the perspective of trying to eliminate certain foods or shift your way of eating singularly within, for an example, a huge Italian family. It's very difficult. How much pushback are you going to have from the grandmom and the aunt? How long are you going to be doing this thing with no pasta?
Right.
It's hard.
You've been eating my pasta your whole
life. Why aren't you eating the pasta? It's like the big fried Greek wedding. What do you mean you don't eat meat? You have to eat meat. It's really hard to say, yeah. I don't believe in that. So this level of self-worth has to be not only developed and fostered, but it has to be that much stronger to combat all of the everything that's working against you as you're trying to basically develop your own kind of sense of self. It's very difficult. It's difficult when you go out and you're not drinking alcohol, you're going out with your friends and you're saying, can I have a club soda? And everyone goes, why aren't you drinking anymore? What is something wrong? Were you addicted to it? I mean,
are you pregnant?
People don't say that. If you say like, oh, I don't eat cheese anymore. I mean, nobody says, why not? Do you want to go home?
It's like, are you sick?
It's so entrenched in our culture that's how you socialize, right? So to do something outside of that is you get ostracized for it. So health, the concept of health is not a concept that our society leans into or promotes, whether it's unconscious or not. We don't realize how much messaging leans into dis-ease, have a sugary Starbucks coffee, have a martini, have a double brownie fudge sundae. It's Friday. You deserved it. You work hard.
Right. Makes you feel good.
Yeah, of course. So it is a challenge. And so when you make that decision to really stand your ground and do it, there is a certain level of self-love that you're applying. So it's a challenge, but the people who kind of do it, and are able to persevere through it, there's a lot of benefit that comes in, and it's like this emergence factor. This emergence concept is this concept of, the best way to describe it is like an H2O molecule, right? A water molecule. One water molecule by itself is just two hydrogen molecules and an oxygen, but if you put a bunch of them together, this emergence effect of wetness comes into play, right? And we can't describe that. We don't have any kind of science to describe that. It's the same concept of all these neuronal connections establish consciousness. What is consciousness? You can't really touch it. You can't really feel it. So emergence effect is the effect that comes in when you decide to choose love and practice functional medicine, or what I call live soul-mindedly. This emergence effect of wisdom and intuition and confidence and energy just comes in and fills all these empty vacuoles that you didn't even realize were there. And it's really a beautiful thing. And you really feel alive. And people will say, and you've heard this, people will say, like, there's a whole new me. I see the world different. It's more colorful. It's more vibrant. It's more beautiful. It's more, I feel more connected. There's so much that comes in with it. You know, there's so much. We're walking around, we're on depression meds, we're on anxiety meds, we're stuck in our phones and social media, we're worrying about whatever other people think in it. And we're all sad. We're all sad.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing.
It's just, yeah.
And there's something we can do. There is something we can do. It's not a hopeless situation. It's taking responsibility for where you are right now.
Correct.
And it's making good choices. Yep. It's making loving choices. Loving, it's choosing choices. Love.
It's choosing love. That's yeah. Exactly right.
So how do our food choices, so we talked about our food choices, and I'm really, you know, I need to work on that too. Like, I had leftover pizza for breakfast. Two pieces.
For breakfast?
Oh. I'm not kidding. I have this at my desk. I'm thinking about
Scarlett Lewis.
All the drugs that I have around me. I'm holding up a Sour Patch for Kids box that I got out of my son's room, but he's not eating it. I am.
Oh,
and
no.
What else was I going to show you?
Don't show it. I'm going to cry.
Oh no, my phone. Like I don't think that we realize that these are drugs.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, but they are, because they rely on our dopamine, and even scrolling through social media, that is a drug that has been analyzed by a dopamine lab to create dopamine hits in your brain. And that is that's something that we just need to be aware of, so that we don't fall prey to that and become hooked, because so many people are. And that's I believe that's a big reason why we feel poorly about ourselves, especially because they're comparing themselves to something that is not real.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just having a conversation with a young 22-year-old, and I was surprised that he was saying, so he's 20, right? So when he, just a few years ago, you know, there was still video games and all these things. And that's kind of how he came up with, like, a couple hours a day of video games, unchecked, you know, internet, phone in my hand. And he was saying, like, I was surprised to hear him say, as a 20-year-old kid, my kids are never going to have access. I wasted so much of my life and so much anxiety worrying about what other people were. I mean, all of these things that we hear, like, older adults saying, here's this young 20-something-year-old kid who's saying, yeah, it's real. Like, I regret it. And I was like, wow, good for you.
Yeah,
but so definitely many, it's go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, so many kids are sleep deprived also because of the screens. And I go around, I talk to older kids, you know, at events in schools, and I have these slides that show the effects of sleep deprivation, including hallucinating and all these, you know, dissociation, all these other things.
Yeah.
And the kids say, Yeah, I have that, or my friends have that. But they know. And here's the other crazy thing. It's not so crazy that I had a podcast with Melanie, who is from Screen Strong. She works with kids, and kids take the initiative to take a break from the cell phone. They don't want to be doing things that aren't good for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that pulls in the role of parent. Like, we just want to be our kid's friend, and we don't, you know, all the way up to, by the way, doing things to acquiesce to them so they don't harm themselves, you know, it's kind of a backwards type thinking. Kids need boundaries. They want parents. There's some of them are even losing confidence in our ability to keep them safe.
Oh,
and so I think that, we've got to, as parents, we have to start taking the lead on all of this. Be aware, be, you know, model following this, this systematic approach to health for your kids, because they're learning from you. They're going to do what you do. They're going to do what you say, but more so they're going to do what they see you doing.
I'm very curious, the Screen Strong, the kids that are making the decision, like limit their screen time, how old is that? What's the range of that kid that's agreeing to that? It's wonderful.
Yeah, that's a great question. It is middle and high school.
Really good for them.
Yes. And
that's fantastic.
Want to do it. They want to do
it. They want to do it.
They want their families to do it.
Oh, wow.
Ultimately, it's a drug and it numbs us, but it does not lead to feeling good. Yeah. It numbs us out in the moment. We feel like, oh, I deserve, you know, a few minutes of scrolling through Instagram or something, right? And I've done it. Yeah. And then 2 hours later or an hour later, I'm like, what?
Where am I?
What? And that was of life. That was not reading my book. That was of not sleeping.
Yeah, exactly. I just said I did this wellness day for kids, and I asked them, we talk about sleep and how to be stress resilient, and said, how many kids sleep with their phones like in their room, or just scrolling or looking or playing a game or whatever? And almost all of them raised their hands, and I was like, geez, like, parents do need to play a role in the technology that their children are exposed to, like using a technology contract in the house, not just for the kids, but for the parents as well.
Right. You got to do what you say.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I mean, hypocrisy is something that children are very tuned into. Like, you can't say, I don't want you to, you know, text at the dinner table, and then like you're doing it and saying, no, but it's for work, you know? And I've definitely done that, you know, but my kids don't have phones yet. So
And put that off. And my son, same way, he's 22 and he's, you know, talking about not allowing his kids to have cell phones until they're 16.
I think that the next generation will definitely have better control over it, because we're living in the like generation that's realizing what it has become or what its potential can be. And I do feel that regulation is something that needs to come in. Like, the internet really doesn't, there aren't any laws yet for trafficking it or monitoring it, because it's new. Like, we didn't know what it was going to be. And I do think that there is in the future going to be some regulation, but within the house, like, children should not be having their phones in the room overnight. That's just, it's a bad idea. Just like you say, children are not sleeping. They're up till 3-4 in the morning. We all do it, right? You just get sucked into it. And then you come out and you say, oh my God, it's been 2 hours.
I mean, it's designed to keep you engaged and not allow you to fall out to sleep.
That's
and
right.
Not to mention the radiation these kids
it's
are getting from this phone. It is. And the damage that it's doing to their eyes and all of this.
And their brains.
But
just like you say, it's neuromarketing. I think neural marketing is actually like a field. It's a field nowadays, you know, like companies will employ
like neuroscientists
and they'll scan people. So corporations are consciously, knowingly hijacking our brains, but also the brains of our children. So there does have to be, in my opinion, some regulation. If we are interested in surviving as a species, you know, if the only interest is that of financial and economic growth and of a few people to become wealthy, then we're doing it perfect, you know. But if at some point we do want to survive as a species and then potentially even consider thriving as a species, there does have to be some change that takes place.
Absolutely, because we you're right, we are the generation that also learned the downside of all of this technology.
Yes.
And and it's not like we don't know. We know it. And we've had you know, Zuckerberg in Congress testifying to the fact that his social media actually is leading to teenage girls committing suicide. I mean, we know the downsides, and that just that's worst case scenario, but there's lots more, and it is up to us. We're responsible for our kids' safety, health, and well-being. We need to really start stepping up. And with that being said, I know that we had talked previously, and it was, and what we're going to be doing this webinar, which is kind of linking our food choices also to the formula, having the courage to try new foods and being grateful for different foods. Right. Hey, and it's for adults too, right?
Oh yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because there is so much research that connects a healthy microbiome to mental health. I mean, it's not just conceptual. There's paper after paper after paper. Now you have to understand the gut microbiome, what it is. It's like all of your intestines contain approximately 5 pounds worth of bacteria. Okay. And that bacteria breaks down and ferments the food products that you put into your body. And it takes those food products and ferments them into chemicals, right? And then we can absorb those chemicals and use them in our body. So when we eat food, we can't utilize the food that we eat without a healthy load of bacteria in our gut. So you know, thinking of yourself as this egocentric individual human is, you're wrong right out of the gate because you can't even eat anything. You can't live without a healthy amount of bacteria in your gut. So you're just one organism hosting about, I don't even know what the number is, but it's 5 pounds worth of bacteria. So these gut microbes, the whole microbiome communicates directly to our, through the central nervous system, through neuronal pathways and endocrine hormones and the immune system pathways, in order to send messaging about what is needed to be made. So for an example, right, 90% of our serotonin hormone, the serotonin hormone is our I'm happy, I feel content hormone. 90% of that hormone is made right in the gut. So if you are someone who's consuming junk food and high sugary foods, those foods are actually more, they lean more into making dopamine hormone. Dopamine is the I feel so good, I want more of that hormone. So that's more of the addictive hormone. And actually when you're making more dopamine, you're making less serotonin. So if you're someone who's consuming either a non-diverse amount of food, meaning I'm that person that eats the same 3 things every single day, you're not introducing diversity to the gut microbiome. Now, stay with me here, but think about this from a metaphorical perspective. Go wider into our social life. Look at our isolation policies and some of our racism and our exclusion of things. The more diverse your gut microbiome is, the healthier the individual you are. Isn't that true of our culture as well?
It is.
The more we are able to express ourselves freely, isn't it true that our society would be more affluent, right? If I'm not worried about what I look like and who I am and who I love and doesn't that mean I'll be more productive and more useful to society? It's the same thing inside the gut. The more complex you eat, so the more color you eat, the more divergent your foods, the stranger, complex diversity. You're not eating the same thing every single day. That produces a healthier gut microbiome. And when your microbiome is diverse, you are more able to assemble neurotransmitters, to effectively communicate chemical messengers, to regulate your mood, regulate anxiety. Believe it or not, there's studies that show you have better pain management, better cognitive skills when your gut microbiome is diverse. So it's literally It's not even metaphorical. When you eat colorful food, you'll feel more colorful. You'll feel happier. When you eat white, brown, beige things, that's how you're going to feel. And if you look at the standard American diet, we call it the SAD diet, S-A-D. It's white, it's brown, it's yellow. It doesn't have any color. There's no phytonutrients. There's no botanicals. There's no essence in it. And so that's pretty much how it works. You know, diversity is the name of the game. You want to eat a complex, wide-ranging style of food. You don't want to just eat the same thing all the time. And you need to avoid processed foods. You know, you can't have things that have begun as part of the earth and then kind of degraded and refined and reformed into some other form of some other product. And then you're consuming and saying, well, this is a potato. No, it's not.
That's fried.
It was a potato many, many, right. many iterations right. ago.
So interesting. That's fascinating. And I'm learning a lot that the fact that the sugar is the dopamine, and that actually inhibits production of serotonin.
Right.
Serotonin is that feel good,
content
that's actually produced in mostly in the gut, which is amazing.
So really,
being aware of the importance of our microbiome is so important.
It's funny because there's a lot of research that suggests that your stomach is like your second brain. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, it's more of like a primary brain. There are more neuronal connections going from the stomach to the brain than there are going from the brain to the stomach. So that just shows you the importance of and the value that whatever you're putting in your body has. And also from an energetic and spiritual component, when we say, my gut, I should have followed my gut.
Yeah,
that's a real thing. You know, I mean, we've been humans for 2 million years, right? 2 million years. We've only been living in this civilized society for about 200,000 years. So for 1.8 million years, we've been making decisions instinctually through our gut. That's how we're here, right? When that didn't work, you died. So those of us that preceded us who made those gut instinct decisions survived and passed those survival skills on to us. So, you know, having the courage to follow your gut is a skill to develop, you know, listening to your gut. And the cleaner your diet is, truthfully, in truth, the cleaner your diet is, the more clean water you drink, the less, I hate to say, garbage that you put into your system, the cleaner the clearer those messages are, because there's no interference, you know?
Fascinating.
So it's easier to follow your gut.
Fascinating. And so what are some of the things that we can do to improve our nutritional health and our gut health? What can we do today?
Okay. It's easy. You know, it can be so complicated and kind of stressful and intimidating. So I always say to people, just look at your plate. Every meal that you consume, look at the plate and ask yourself, is it colorful? Now, it doesn't mean you pick one color and say, well, everything's white here. No.
Is white a color?
Yeah. Say to yourself, every meal I eat, I'm going to commit to like 5 colors.
Oh, that's a lot.
That's a lot. It's a lot in the beginning. Make sure that your plate has purples and reds and blues and greens and orange. Make sure, and that it's not just like one string of a shred of carrot. Oh yeah, there's some orange there. You know? You really want to focus your diet on fruits and vegetables, because remember that 1.8 million years we've been here, that's what we were eating most of the time. It was not easy to find an animal to eat. It wasn't easy to catch a fish. It was easy to graze on fruits and vegetables and, you know, grasses and things like that. So every human, every species, I will say, has a diet that is an optimal diet, right? When you eat an optimal diet, you will live long and healthy. When you eat a diet that's not what your body is asking for intuitively, disease comes in, right? So out in nature, you don't really see the level of sugar that we consume. There are items that contain sugar, but they're natural sugars in fruits and vegetables and grains. But the amount of processed sugar that we eat actually it's digested by the body in a completely different way than, for an example, the sugar you would get from a watermelon or the sugar you would get from a date. So I always just tell people, if you can't make any of those exclusionary changes like limiting dairy and limiting gluten, which are extremely inflammatory on the system, just focus on eating more color, introduce more color to the plate. Even if you don't change anything else, like even if you have a burger on your plate, throw the fries away and put a salad on there. That's an improvement. That's a step, you know? Then the next week, take the burger off the bun, make the salad bigger and just put the burger patty on there. That's an improvement. It's a step. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. You can make incremental changes, right? As you feel comfortable, you know, it's kind of like I tell people, wake up in the morning and just do like one jumping jack, one push-up. Do it for a month. Then you've developed the habit. Now do two, now do three, now do five. Now you're not afraid of it. Do it in the morning and at night, you know, because all of a sudden you're not weird about exercising. You're not weird about eating vegetables. You're okay. I can do it. I'm comfortable with this.
I think it's really important also that you are aware of the success after that. Hey, I said I was going to do something.
And I did it.
How you feel afterwards, because it does make you feel better. It raises your self-confidence.
Yes.
Because you are loving yourself.
Yes.
And all of this works together. And
right.
Yeah. It does become a habit, and your kids are watching you.
You're
and
right.
It doesn't mean you have to be perfect.
No.
Share your failures and mistakes with them and say, just an opportunity to learn. I made a mistake, but I'm going to,
yeah.
I know that my mistakes don't make me feel good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get back on the functional medicine train.
And
I'm
gonna be, yeah.
Doing what's right for me and you.
If I skipped an exercise day or if I ate a bad meal, that doesn't mean I don't ever have to eat healthy again. It just means the next day I am going to eat healthy. The next day I am going to. I think a lot of people, like when they quit smoking, right? They'll smoke one cigarette and they'll be like, oh, forget it. I'm back to a pack a day.
Right.
No, you just had one cigarette. You can go back to not smoking again, right? So the failure of it's just one failure, but you can go back to the habit that you're trying to develop.
You know? And I always say the opposite of anxiety is positive action. So remember okay. that when you're taking a positive step forward, you're also moving away from all those other things, all those other diseases, disease, but also dis-ease. We all want to live in ease and you're moving towards that ease.
That's right.
And doing that yourself, and it's empowering and it makes you feel good and you're being a role model for other people, which we all are. And so it's really important.
I just started reading this book. So I'm on page like 9, right? But the fact that I want to talk about it must be something. And
next book.
Yeah, here it is. The book is called Connections. Because I just started it, I'm not going to know the author. So, but that's not good for the author. So let me see if I can look it up. It's two authors. Let's see. The authors are, come on.
Vivek Mercury.
It is Nicholas Christakis and James Fowler, both PhDs. Christakis is an MD PhD, but the concept of the book is all about the importance of social connections and how, you know, everything that we've kind of described here in how It is like the frog boiling slowly in water. We're not isolated. We are totally connected to one another in ways that we don't realize.
Yes.
And Nick, I said I'm on page 10 of this book, but already they've mentioned that like if your friend's friend's friend loses weight, you lose weight. If your friend's friend's friend is overeating, you tend to overeat.
Wow.
And I haven't investigated, you know, the connection, how that is, but there's something there that when you choose love, when you have the courage, when you have you know, this concept of self-nourishment, you are rippling into your community in ways that I haven't figured out yet.
That's incredible.
But it's been studied. It's a real thing. So, you know, what you're doing here, what I'm trying to do here, it really does have an effect.
That's incredible.
And that one push-up, that one exercise, that one string of carrot that you've eaten, it's the resolve that you are exercising to change the world. You know, it's not just yourself. It's not just self-improvement. It's really global. And there's an immense power to that.
That's amazing. So we actually all, everything that we do impacts others. And so this concept of connection and being connected, I would say that love is connection.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. And really all the research does boil down to connection makes us stronger. Fear divides us. So choosing love and connection is something that we've been talking about this whole hour. And
that's right.
I am so grateful for you to have you in my life and have you as a part of the Choose Love movement.
same. It's been really a blessing getting to know you. And I've loved all of our interactions. It's just, I love you.
I know I love you too. And I just always feel so good after talking to you.
I
learned so much and we'll continue this. We're going to be having please check out the upcoming webinar.
Yeah.
Be on the lookout for that we're going to do that together. And we're also including Nadine's expertise into the curriculum that will launch in the near future too. So we're just, we are partnering in all ways and so excited. So thank you very much for partaking in this Choose Love podcast, and there is more to come.
Yay. It was a pleasure, Scarlett. Thanks for including me. It's really, really, really a rewarding experience to work with your organization.
Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, 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 oh. It's all part of us. We can all choose love. It'll lift you up. If you let it in, let the heat